Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lossow. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
The werewolves in Underworld would be in a lot of trouble if they fought us.
Why is that?
Well, you know, we've talked about in the past with John Levengood. He can't make it here today, but so he's here in spirit. But in the past, we talked about how in the movie Snowpiercer, where there are these thugs who hold this, they have these axes, right?
Yeah.
And they take time to dunk their axes into a fish.
Yeah.
Right? And we decided that during that time when they're axe dunking into a fish that we would drop kick them.
I mean, yeah, naturally. Just take advantage of that that window of time there.
I mean, poke them in the eye, throw something at them, you know?
Right.
So I was watching Underworld. My wife and I, we were cooking. I was basically just washing dishes. Mm. But, you know, you have to have something on in the background that you're not paying attention to. So I saw it on Netflix, put it on.
Good dishwasher movie.
Exactly. Yeah. And the werewolves in that film, in the middle of fights, they take like 15 seconds to turn into a werewolf. And that's 15 seconds where they're just standing there. And everybody in the movie waits for them to do it.
I mean, it's just common courtesy, you know?
Right? Yeah, but you know what? If you were like, hey, Mark, hold up. I got to load this gun. I'd be like, no.
Right. I mean, you know, it just, I feel like, if someone's going to, you know, want to kill me, right, but they're going to want to turn into a werewolf first, like, I respect the fact that they're taking the time to do it right, you know? They're taking the time to just kind of slowly, like, you know, grow a snout, grow hair, and grow fangs, you know? I feel like, you know, I actually feel kind of honored that they're going through the trouble to maul me in a grand fashion, you know?
I mean, think about this. It's like, hey, did you hear about how Lazaveth went down?
Oh, yeah.
No, what happened? A werewolf got him. Like, a werewolf? No, the guy who turns into the werewolf shot him.
Yeah.
Wait, so he wasn't a werewolf? No, it was just a guy who is a werewolf. But was he a werewolf at the time? No, he didn't bother doing it.
Ugh.
I'm like, well, that's lame.
Exactly.
Like, but if I heard, what happened to Lazaveth? Mauled by a werewolf.
eight foot tall werewolf.
And I'll be like, did they eat them? And they're like, yeah, most of them.
Yeah. Just
I'd be
bits.
Like, well, I think that's what he would have liked.
Yeah. So you can see where I'm coming from. Like, that's why I'm waiting for him to finish his transformation. I probably wouldn't stand a good chance either way. I might as well go out in a blaze of glory, right?
So you don't respect people who dunk axes in fish, but you respect the process of turning into a werewolf.
Exactly. You know, it's I'm just trying to see it through their eyes, you know, their werewolf
eyes. I mean, it's kind of cheap. Like, I'm not a cheap fighter, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, that'd be to my detriment.
You're just pretty straightforward. Like, you just run towards a guy, just swinging both fists.
Yeah. Like, you know, I would just, you know, I mean, maybe I'd kick him in the balls when he was turning into a werewolf, but that wouldn't kill him. So when he does turn into a werewolf, he just is really angry.
Yeah, he's like extra, extra ornery.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Oh, all right, man. Perfect.
Yeah. All right, Mark. I think it's time to start the podcast with listener questions.
Yeah. Right. And this one comes from Jeremy. And he asks, along the lines of Chuck Klosterman's recent book, which actually is entitled, I haven't read it yet, but the name of it is, I've read his other books, but What If We're Wrong? Thinking about the present as if it were the past. All right. So he's asking this question.
Okay.
Along the lines of his recent book, Adam Sandler's movies have a decent chance of being a future generation's idea of what turn of the century comedic movies were like. His movies made a ton of money and were a major part of teenage boys' lives. He mattered from 1995 to 2005. Actually, 2011.
Yeah.
as movie fans, are y'all okay with this? Or does Punch Drunk Love redeem Little Nicky, et cetera, all? Or example, or does Punch Drunk Love and Funny People, you know, forgive everything?
Oh, man.
So basically what he's saying is, are you okay with Adam Sandler movies being a future generation's idea of what it turns out, of what turn of the century comedic movies were like?
Okay. Here's the thing. I, like a lot of people, enjoy mainly just kind of the first half of Adam Sandler's total filmography. You know, if I had to pick a group, but you know, even though I don't enjoy like, you know, half of his movies that he's made, I can't disagree with the notion that his movies are kind of representative of like comedies during this era. Because like, you know, whether or not you hate him or love him, like he's been a big presence in comedies. You know, especially for us growing up. Like, it's just his movies always make so much money. And that's 14 really
in a row made over 100 million.
Yeah, and that's really the bottom line. That's why people make these movies. Like, I know, like, we're all about the, you know, the artistry of it, but really, like, it's all about how much money you can pull. And no one's really made, you know, more money than Adam Sandler. Someone's probably gonna come in like a comment, like, "Oh, actually, so and so made more money." But like,
Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks and maybe Will Smith, but those were the only three that have had longer runs.
Yeah, but they didn't do exclusively Adam Sandler comedies.
Yeah, so, exactly.
So yeah, I don't disagree. Like, no, Adam Sandler movies are definitely representative of like turn of the century comedies, even though I don't really enjoy like half of them. Really,
I mean. We basically have Wayne's World to blame.
Right. Great movie.
And then, yeah, perfect movie. But then it goes into 94 when it's the rise of Jim Carrey, which helps the rise of Adam Sandler. But Adam Sandler's had a longer comedic run than Jim Carrey because he wasn't his slapstick. Right. I feel like Adam Sandler learned to adapt with the times, and he built a staple around him that he could keep calling back.
Yeah.
So for me, yeah, I think if you're a film historian, if you appreciate film, you just need to look at what, like you said, what he accomplished with Adam Sandler comedies. This is a guy who had Al Pacino singing about Dunkachinos. This is a guy who in Little Nicky, Harvey Keitel played a devil and he shoved a pineapple up Hitler's butt. I mean, this is like the Waterboy was huge. You know, adjusted for inflation, the Waterboy domestically made $296 million.
Oh man, that movie just came out like a bomb. Not like in a bad sense, but like it was just like everybody was just quoting that movie. Like it was just like the impact that movie had in pop culture. It was just crazy. Go ahead.
Oh no, you go ahead.
I forgot what I was going to say.
My bad. Sorry, I jumped in there.
No, you're good.
And like, you know, the 90s too, if you think about, remember the rise of like Limp Bizkit and Woodstock? Yeah. There's like that big riot at Woodstock. And there was a lot of like anger in the 90s. There was like people call them bro anger or whatever. But there was that kind of facet at the time. So his movies hit at the right time with the right kind of music, with the right kind of crowd. And I think he built pound for pound, like we just said, one of the most loyal fan bases that any cinematic star has ever had.
Yeah. You know, love it or hate it, Adam Sandler knows knows what his fans want. You know, really. There's like kind of a consistency about all of his movies. Like it's just an Adam Sandler movie is definitely an Adam Sandler movie. I know that sounds super obvious, but it's just like, just think about it. I'm just like, you would never confuse it for like a Judd Apatow movie, even though he made a movie with Judd Apatow, but like still.
I think that Judd Apatow movie hurt him.
Oh, Funny People?
And the reason being is, in that movie, he was making fun of himself almost. And people were like, remember that Adam Sandler was really good.
Yeah.
But then after that, he went back to Jack and Jill and just go with it. And people were like, what's going on? You know, like, he just was amazing. And now he's going back to Sandler movies.
Yeah.
And you want to hear something even more interesting? He hasn't done press since 1996, I think.
Really?
Yeah. Well, after Billy Madison came out, people were so mean. They called him the idiot and they bashed him. He does not do written press interviews. So for the last 20 years, he doesn't do press for movies. There's a no, you know, write, they don't write anything about his films.
Wow.
So he hates the press. And so because of that, the press doesn't like him. So after Pixels flopped in 2014, all these posts came out bashing Sandler. There's one post that said 5 reasons why he's done. And they're like, he's aged out of his material. He's not edgy. He needs new friends. He hates the press. Is he even trying? So, I mean, there's a massive backlash against him. But what I love about Sandler is I feel like he's like a course correct for a lot of cinema. He's like a Michael Bay, where I feel like he's critic proof.
He is. He is, for sure.
And I think Hollywood needs that, because if you think about a lot of us who talk about movies all the time and write about movies and live movies, we're in a bubble. And, you know, we're angry that Green Room didn't do better. We're angry that everybody wants them to do better. But there's people out there who don't give a crap about movie reviews. They make Paul Blart the number one rated rented comedy of a few years ago. I mean, there are people out there that are going to watch Sandler films that don't care about film criticism. They just like Adam Sandler. If you think about TV, NCIS, CSI, there's a pattern to it. People like to watch the same thing. I mean, people feel comfort. I do. People feel comforted with Adam Sandler comedies.
Right. Because I mentioned earlier, like, an Adam Sandler movie has like all the hallmarks of like what his audience is looking for. You know.
Yeah. And he just keeps doing that. And I do believe the quality has absolutely declined. But I think these movies have a very weird aspect to them. Like, and just go with it, right? There's a scene where Dave Matthews and Nicole Kidman, Oscar winner Nicole Kidman, are on a stage. And Dave Matthews picks up a coconut with his butt. You know, what else is there? I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry. There's like, you know, he does the weirdest. You don't mess with the Zohan. I mean, it's like the weirdest. He's a hairdresser who has sex with his old clientele. But in that, there's always, I don't know. It's really interesting how his movies haven't been that great, but
right.
There's they're not boring.
No.
like, I think you either love them or you hate watch them.
Yeah. You know, every time I fire up an Adam Sandler movie, I'm always expecting to see Roy Schneider, John Turturro.
Yep.
Like his other cast, recurring.
Wait, Rob Schneider?
Yeah, Rob Schneider. I say Roy Schneider?
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, I was, I guess I was stuck in a conversation from before the podcast, but
yeah. Like David Spade, you know, Terry Crews has done a few. Oh, man, there's that one basketball announcer who's been in all of his latest films.
Oh,
gosh. ESPN guy. Dan something. Harmon? No, wait, Dan, that's Patrick. The guy who did Community. Dan Patrick.
Right.
And I don't know. So I guess this took us off the tangent of that question. But right.
Oh, actually, going back to the question, like the last part of his question, like this Punch Drunk Love. Redeem Little Nicky, and the answer to that is no.
No. That was on cable the other day, which I'm sure it's on 5 different channels at the same time.
With Little
Nicky?
That
is a weird movie.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. Like,
that's what? Like,
you know what's weird about Little Nicky? Well, one thing that's weird about Little Nicky is that he was still like his you know, image hadn't been tarnished yet. Like, people still thought of Adam Sandler as like a, you know, just quality stuff. But then like Little Nicky came out, I'm just like, yeah, I don't know. This is like probably the first Adam Sandler movie I didn't really like, really. So yeah, I don't know.
The only scene I thought was funny was when someone made Patricia Arquette forcefully flick off Little Nicky. I don't know why I thought that was funny.
Yeah. Although, and also Punch Drunk Love, which is a great movie. I think that's it's not really like a Sandler movie. It's really like a Paul Thomas Anderson movie to me.
Yeah.
So.
Who just basically utilized, oh, Luis Guzman too. He and Luis Guzman were in Punch Drunk Love.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, that's a PTA movie. And so I think there's other actors that, like Alexander Payne, he had Chris Klein in his film, and Chris Klein was brilliant. I think there are directors who can take anybody and make them good. And he just utilized Sandler's physicality and anger really well to right. suit his art house needs.
Right. All right. So what was the answer? What would you say is the answer to that question?
Patricia Arquette flicking, forcefully flicking somebody off.
Right, yeah. It took us a while to get to that answer.
Yeah.
All right. We got another one, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
And this one's from Johnny. And it says, I haven't seen Billy Madison or Happy Gilmore in years. Do they still hold up? Why or why not? And for me, since I'm so nostalgic for those movies, because I saw them when I was, what, 12 through 14, 12 through 15, I would say yes. I mean, I don't know if I ever want to watch Billy Madison again.
Yeah.
Like, I watched a clip where the guy talks about how stupid that answer was over and over again. You know, I'll do that. But I would say Happy Gilmore holds up. I mean, they just had the 20th anniversary, and all the golf, you know, there's a lot of golfers celebrating it. And it was a big deal on with professional golfers. So they still cherish that movie, and they love it. So I think Happy Gilmore does hold up, because I think sports movies in general hold up a little bit better because there's something a little bit more timeless about them.
Right. No, I agree with Happy Gilmore. I watched it, I want to say, sometime at the end of last year, so that's recent-ish. I don't know. I enjoyed it. Billy Madison, I don't think really holds up as well. Like, if you go back and look and watch the movie, like, it just it's just full of, like, really random comedy and really random jokes. And, like, you know, back then, like, it was funny. But now, these days, it's just like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's going on here.
Stop you know? Looking at me, Swan.
Yeah.
And, like, everyone pees themselves and, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might cringe a little bit watching that. That's like a movie like Surf Ninjas that I don't want to watch again.
Yeah, just watch it in your head. Rewatch it in your head. Yeah.
But you try golfing and not going like, it's all in the hips. Or, you know, I eat pieces of shit like you for breakfast. You eat pieces of shit for breakfast? No. That's a great bad guy.
Yeah.
Like, Shooter McGavin is pure gold.
He just has, like, that a-hole smug look down. Like, down pat. I'm like, oh, nice.
Yeah, I mean, sure, he has this, like, angry guy hockey shtick, whatever. But yeah. It holds up.
Right, right. So the answer to that question is
Subway sandwiches.
Subway sandwiches. Yeah, sounds good.
Because Happy Gilmore, right?
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, thank you to our listeners for those wonderful listener questions. I'm pretty sure we didn't enlighten you the way you wanted to be enlightened, but I think you got enlightened in other ways, somewhat.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're probably still just as even more lost now than before.
I really hope that somebody was writing a paper about Adam Sandler while listening to this podcast.
Oh my God, they're gonna fail. Don't listen to us, man.
Subway sandwiches.
If your grades are on the line.
Don't give MFF your time.
Yeah, seriously. All right, Mark. Well, I think people already know what the topic of today's podcast is, but for the formal introduction, I'll shoot it to Mark.
Yeah, so we wanted to talk about Adam Sandler's move over to Netflix, and we wanted to talk about his two films, Ridiculous Six and The Do-Over. But before we got to those movies, which actually have been huge on Netflix, I mean, The Ridiculous Six is the most watched movie ever.
Wow.
On Netflix. It's the most watched movie ever in all their territories.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it is a massive success for Sandler, who doesn't like to do press, so he doesn't have to do press with this. And this is going to sound random, but the other day I was thinking about Adam Sandler and his move to Netflix, and I went on Reddit and I did a discussion on movies, and I wrote, Adam Sandler's Netflix deal was a great idea. He doesn't have to worry about box office disappointment, and his films can break all of Netflix's records. His fans will watch regardless of the bad reviews, and Netflix makes it easier to hate watch. Either way, it is more press. But a weird thing happened. It ended up getting up to 7,200 upvotes, and I was number one on the front page of Reddit. Yeah. So my random observation about Sandler really hit a nerve, and it had over 3,000 comments.
Folks, if you're doubting Mark's Reddit prowess, just search for it on Reddit. And like you can see how many upvotes it has. Like, well, I think it's crazy. Yeah. You had the number one post on the front page of Reddit. you know how much marketing companies are willing to pay to get like that type of coverage that you had?
Yeah, it's crazy. And for me, I guess I did it almost as a fan of Sandler, even though he hasn't done me any favors.
Yeah.
But I do think this deal was smart. And I mean, 3,000 comments, and you're not going to believe it. Like, people love the do-over. I mean, Sandler's fans are there. He has a massive fan base. His movies have collected over, like, $4 billion worldwide. I mean, his four highest grossing movies of all time are, like, his last four, which are, well, I'm sorry. Without inflation worldwide, they are Hotel Transylvania 2, Hotel Transylvania, Grown Ups, Grown Ups 2, and Pixels. His last five movies have been his highest grossing worldwide movies, unadjusted. And Pixels is terrible, by the way.
Yes. Yes, a movie where Kevin James is the president of the United States, like, unironically.
I watched it, and I hated every second of it. It was not good.
I actually saw that movie with Robert Lamb, a shark dropper, and like as the credits are rolling, I stood up, I looked at Robert in the eyes, and without saying a word, I literally walked straight to the exit into my car. I didn't say anything to him. I just walked out.
it's nostalgia done terribly, and everyone yells.
Yeah,
and it's all right. So I don't want to let that lay us down. But right. I'll tell you what, Ridiculous 6 and Grown Ups compared to Pixels, they're Kurosawa films compared to what Pixels was. But yeah, no. So I got 3,000 comments on that, and I started actually kind of looking into his box office. And guess how much money Pixels made worldwide?
Way more than it should have.
$244 million.
Ugh.
Guess how much Grown Ups and Grown Ups 2 made combined worldwide?
Way more than they should have.
Yep, $530 million.
Wow.
Yeah, holy guess God. How much the Hotel Transylvania movies have made?
Those are actually pretty decent movies. So.
Yeah, they are. I like them.
I'm hoping a lot.
Over $800 million.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. And so it's kind of crazy, though, because after Pixels supposedly flopped in the States – and the budget was only it was either $68 million or $88 million, which is not big. And his movies made money, but everyone was calling them a flop, which is false. So I kind of started looking into the press and why they hated him so much after Pixels. And I get that he put out Jack and Jill and Big Daddy and Just Go With It and Bedtime Stories and all of that.
Yeah.
But to be a film critic and to hate somebody – this seems ridiculous to me. I don't know. It's a formula, and the formula worked. So for me, as opposed to hate, I like understanding, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Like, actually, I don't hate actors because they keep making movies because the public keeps watching them. And this is going to sound random, but I feel like you can't judge – all right, so I'm going to compare Adam Sandler movies to Nicholas Winton Refn movies, the guy who made Neon Demon and Drive.
Oh, please do.
Like, you can't look at both of these movies and compare them – you have to grade it on an Adam Sandler movie scale.
What is the Adam Sandler movie scale?
You know, a man-child – has a beautiful wife that's way too good for him. He does something stupid.
Yeah.
He's always white collar.
Okay.
And his friends are in it. All right. And Nicholas Winding Refn, there has to be blood. It has to look beautiful. And it has to be borderline incoherent. But you can't, like, look at both of these. You can't look at a Nicholas Winding Refn film and be like, compare it to any other thing on your book. You just have to look at it as a Nicholas Winding Refn movie.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Makes total sense.
Like, I just, like, it's kind of, so that's the only time you're ever going to hear those two compared. And I know I'm going off on a tangent. But so I started looking through his movies, Sandler's movies, the money they made. And then I started looking at the Netflix deal. And I kind of started reading more about that.
The Netflix deal, sorry, I can't talk. No, the Netflix deal is for four movies that are exclusive to Netflix. I couldn't find any figures, like how much money like he was making, but I'm presuming a lot.
Yeah. I mean, if you've read this Sony email hacks, you know, he wants his people, he wants himself, because he produces, and his people to be taken care of.
Okay.
One of the main email chains was he wanted Alan Covert, who is in Grandma's Boy, and he's his producer. He wanted him to get an extra $100K for Hotel Transylvania 2, which it almost made $500 million. So I don't, you know.
It's pretty reasonable.
But there's a big called an asshole because he wanted his salary to be to be bumped from $500,000 to $600,000. Now Sony's baseline was $500,000, but if you're going to make a movie that makes, you know, Robert Downey Jr. gets paid $50 million for Avengers, so. These Hotel Transylvania movies were worth it. And so Sony let him go. He went to Netflix. And I started reading some quotes here. I was reading in Wired, and it says, "But for Netflix, scoring a big Hollywood name is worth the risks. Sandler detractors aren't likely to cancel Netflix. They just won't watch the movie. And Netflix isn't worried about them anyway. Its biggest goal with the Sandler films is to attract new subscribers beyond the U.S., where Sandler's brand of humor makes language barriers less of a concern. To reach that audience as efficiently as possible, Netflix has decided it doesn't want to deal with Hollywood. The easiest way is to go global. It turns out, is with a film that belongs to Netflix and Netflix alone. He is one of the most bankable, dependable stars on Netflix around the world. Any Sandler movie from the last 20 years immediately makes the top 10 in any country when Netflix makes it available. I found out that Blended, that terrible film, is one of the biggest films in Venezuela's history.
okay.
He has massive box office success in Mexico and Brazil. Latin America loves him. And Netflix is a global company. And they looked at the global tallies of Grown Ups, Grown Ups 2, Blended, all of these, and saw that his films make a lot of money globally. And so let's say a Sandler movie comes out, 20 million people subscribe, or 10 million people subscribe for each one. That's $70 million in 1 month, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, Stranger Things, which we'll talk about on a future podcast, that was probably funded by this deal.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's hypothetical. But so for me, a lot of people talk about how stupid Sandler is, but I think this was a smart move. He doesn't have to deal with press. He doesn't have to deal with Sony. He just deals with people who let him make whatever he wants to make.
Plus, another thing is that Netflix, you know, they're, from everything I've read, they've taken kind of a laissez-faire, that's what I get for trying to say a French word, a hands-off approach to filmmaking. Because if you look at all the Netflix originals, you get the feeling that the creators had like kind of full reign of like what they wanted to do for the most part. You know, you have like House of Cards, Orange is the New Black, Daredevil. Like they're all very
American Summer.
Yeah, they're all very unique shows, and like you kind of get the feeling like in their current form, like I don't think they would have been made like on, you know, your mainstream TV. So these Netflix Adam Sandler movies, we're seeing, like, there's a chance we're seeing, like, pure Adam Sandler, you know, without, like, any restrictions, which is kind of weird to say, because when you say, like, they were weird enough in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and now he doesn't have to worry about Sony. He doesn't have to worry about Nintendo. You know, he just has to worry about making a Sandler movie.
Yeah.
It's like allowing Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, to play the number, what is it, 10 role? which is the striker, maybe the number 11 role, since, I don't know, but allows him to just be a striker. You know, he doesn't have to play defense. And I guess we can jump into the movies, the Ridiculous Six and
well,
the Do-Over.
Actually, before we review those two movies, why don't we take a quick break, you know?
And we'll drink some product placement Adam Sandler stuff.
Oh, yeah. We'll be right back.
Robert.
Yeah.
Best Charlton Heston line of all time.
Where's the butter?
Fantastic. That was that's a good one. John, you. He can't recover. Well, anyways, go to sharkdropper.com, www.sharkdropper.com. Check out all of our fantastical podcasts.
I can't believe it's not butter.
It's a little too late for that.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. That was Yeah, so I was just browsing through Netflix, as you do, on the break. And, yeah, I actually just binge-watched all of a certain miniseries that just came out.
So good.
Yeah, yeah. Fuller House. What a great, great piece of work that was, you know. It was a throwback, really.
Nostalgia.
Yeah. To the early 90s. Oh, no. Honestly, I did actually watch Fuller House, like all of it. At the end of it, I was like, why did I watch that?
Yeah, I haven't watched it. I tried to watch The Cobbler with Adam Sandler in it. I turned it off.
Yeah.
Have you heard of that movie?
Yeah, it's where he plays like a cobbler. But like, I guess when he steps into their shoes, he sees their eyes or something.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, didn't the guy who directed The Cobbler, didn't he also...
he won an Oscar.
Yeah. Not for The Cobbler, but...
Spotlight.
Yeah.
Pretty. And he also directed Win Win and Station Agent, which are incredibly highly rated.
So why did he do The Cobbler about it? Why does Adam Sandler attract so much talent, you know?
I think people just love him. Like, his movies, he said after 50 First Dates, all of his movies, he just wanted to be vacations.
That's true.
See, work with him. You're probably just hanging out.
That's actually pretty genius.
Like, you want to get on his payroll.
Right.
Like, Nick Swartzen right now is loving life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, Adam Sandler's been loyal to all of his friends. just watch any of his movies and you'll see. Wow.
It's like, let's go do Grown Ups and Grown Ups 2 and let's chill by a lake.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's, like, such a perfect scam. Well, not a scam, but, like... the word scam is too harsh, but like, no, I think Sandler's got to figure it out, man. He's living life.
Yeah, I mean, he knows what's up, and right. You know what? You can't blame him because people are paying to watch it.
Right, right. Well, all right. Well, enough of Adam Sandler talk. Let's do another listener question, which is probably about Adam Sandler.
So this one's from Eric, and it said, "What happened with Funny People? I didn't understand how the first half of the movie could be so brilliant, and then the second half was such a shit dive."
Well, there was our PG-13.
So, yeah. No, we still got one F-bomb left. We can use that while talking about the do-over.
Okay.
But, I liked the second part of Funny People just because I know Judd Apatow. And I'm not saying Eric is like this, but I do know that Adam Sandler fans hated that. Like... I picture some stereotypical – oh, that's bad. I picture some big-time Sandler fan going like, "Honey, the channel got changed. It's another Sandler film." Put it back to the other Sandler film we were just watching.
I remember this movie being way too long. Like, I wanted to say, after the movie, I was like, they could have cut like an hour out of that movie.
Judd Apatow movies feel like they're about 6 hours long.
He gets a little
– pontificates.
Maybe a little self-indulgent. I don't know if that's the right word, but like, it's just like, I think he really likes, Judd Apatow really likes Judd Apatow movies. So, you know.
Yeah, and like, I love the beginning of it, but then it becomes that family drama, and I still think it's a good movie, But you're right. It's very indulgent. And, like, this is 40.
Right.
I mean, I like having Apatow around, but they're very Apatowian films. So I guess you got to gauge Apatowian films on an Apatowian scale.
Did the Apatowian and Sandler Ian, like, team up, like, kind of offset, like, each other's, like, uniqueness? I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't
like
know.
He wasn't, Sandler, like, wasn't part of the stable, so he kind of comes in.
Yeah.
And he threw off the balance a little bit.
Right. Okay, ooh. So I'm looking up the length of this movie. It's 2 hours and 33 minutes. Like,
what?
That's what it says on Google.
Oh, my goodness.
2 hours and 33 minutes. Yeah. I still stand by what I said. You could have cut an hour out of that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I enjoyed the movie for the most part. It wasn't a comedy. Like, if you look at it as kind of like a drama slash character study, it's actually a really decent movie. You know, it was just too long. It was like, just too long.
Apatow, if his movies were cakes,
okay,
like there'd be like a lot of extra frosting on it.
Mm. And the actual cake itself would be like really, really sweet. And then like you take a couple bites and then you're like, oh, I'm done.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you're right. He adds a lot. He just adds so, there's so much to his films.
Oh, yeah. I think, I don't know. Like it was a good premise. Like an up and coming comic meets like his hero. And like, it was like provided good insight into like kind of the comedy world, because that's where Judd Apatow came out. It was like, it felt kind of semi biographical a little bit, autobiographical.
Yeah, no, you're right.
So, yeah, this is what I get for trying to combine words. Like, it's just like my mouth's like, no, I ain't gonna do that.
I love what Ebert said about Eric Bana's character in that movie. He's like, he looks like he always wants to punch somebody in the face. Like, he's sizing everybody up.
That's why he got hired. He's got a great sizing up face. Like,
Do you think that's the same thing we hate about Apatow is the same thing we love?
Yeah, most likely. Because, like, what are, like, the hallmarks of, like, an Apatow movie? Witty dialogue.
A lot of talking.
Like, witty dialogue here and there. A lot of profanity.
Man-childs.
Yeah, profanity.
Schlubby men.
Yeah. Can we just say Seth Rogen?
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. And Amy Mann.
Yeah.
Or Leslie Mann.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think in the right doses, the Judd Apatow hallmarks are pretty good. You know.
I don't think they date as well.
Yeah. Knocked Up. Like, I watched recently, and it wasn't as funny as I remembered. I mean, it's still funny. It's still hilarious. It's just, I wasn't laughing as hard as when I first saw it.
Mm-hmm.
This is, 40-Year-Old Virgin. That still holds up. I think that's still pretty funny. Superbad, it's still hilarious. Like, I don't know if I laugh as hard, but yeah, it still holds up, but I don't know.
I'm going to watch This Is 40 when I'm 40.
Right.
And see if my opinion changes on it.
Okay.
But they're all such white-collar turds. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's Judd Apatow. He writes what he knows.
Wait, we're not calling him a turd, are we?
Oh, we're calling him white-collar.
There we go. I like it.
Right. I don't think he's a blue-collar. I could be wrong. Maybe he does like a manual labor job, like on the side in between movies.
He's probably platinum collar right now.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Eric, for that wonderful listener question, which I think the answer was platinum collar.
Yeah.
Right. Awesome.
Can you pop a platinum collar?
Yeah. You need like a welder or something like that.
In a few hours.
Yeah.
You know, like I think I'm gonna wear a pop tonight. And then you hear a bunch of, like, noise in the background. You know what? Put it back.
Yeah, oh, man.
You were 3 hours late to the movie.
Yeah, well, I had to fix my collar. All right, Mark, I think it's time to move on to the second part of our topic today.
Right? Yeah. I'm going to tell the story of two movies whose average Rotten Tomato score is like 3%.
Right. So wait, Adam Sandler, he had a Netflix deal to make four movies with him, and two of them are already out.
Yeah.
He's making these pretty quick.
Yeah. And I mean, the press around him are so bad. Remember in the first one with the Native Americans walking off the set?
Oh, yeah, because it was just, you know, really offensive.
Yeah. And then I read the reviews later on. I scoured through them. And basically everyone's saying its biggest fault is not racism towards Native Americans, is that it's dumb. Like the AV Club, let's see, the film's relatively good-natured attitude towards its Native American characters, but it's there. The Apache tribe that raises Sandler's character is depicted as a supportive and honorable, with many more of the jokes coming at the expense of white dudes. When one Apache admits that sometimes a white man speaks the truth, it comes with a caveat that the rate of this happening is like 1 in 20. I do love that line.
Right.
And there's a line where one of the Apache guys is like, hey, Carl does a great white guy impersonation. And the guy's like, hey, guys, you want to go boating? And then there's another one. It says, as much of a relief it is to see that Sandler and company haven't made an especially racist or blatant comedy, they said the movie also soft pedals to a fault. Right. So that drama went away. You know, there are still people named like Beaver Breath. And there's a scene in there where Steve Zahn calls a Native American woman Beaver Breath, and then she's, or Will Forte, and then she goes, what? And he's like, wait, that's your name? Did I actually get your name right?
Just like run down the cast real quick?
Yeah.
For Ridiculous Six. I wanted to list all the people. Well, I'm going through all the IMDb cast list right now. But you have Adam Sandler, obviously. Terry Crews. Jorge Garcia, who was Hurley and Lost. Taylor Lautner. Rob Schneider, obviously. Luke Wilson. Will Forte. Steve Zahn. Harvey Keitel. Nick Nolte. John Lovitz. Winnie Cummings. David Spade. Danny Trejo. Nick Swartzen. That was just like, this is the cast.
Like, Vanilla Ice, David Spade.
Yeah.
Steve Buscemi.
Wow, this is a really good cast for a comedy, right?
Yeah, and Ridiculous 6 tells the story of White Knife, played by Adam Sandler, who is raised by an Apache tribe, but his dad, the human bullfrog, Nick Nolte, comes into play. And Nick Nolte needs $50,000. So Sandler goes around, he wants to rob from bad guys. Which doesn't make sense, because if bad guys rob from good guys, right?
Right.
And then you rob. So if you wait for bad guys to rob good guys, and then you rob those bad guys, you're still robbing from good, because you could give that money back.
It's all very confusing. Just don't think about it too much.
And so they have to raise $50,000, but then they're chased by Will Forte and Steve Zahn's gang. They end up chopping Harvey Keitel's head clean off his shoulders. And there are a lot of dick jokes. A mosquito gets its balls chopped off. Jorge Garcia has gross stuff on his balls. Taylor Lautner gets his dick sucked by a donkey.
Mm. Taylor Lautner is great in this, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, he goes for it.
Yeah, usually he's like a cardboard cutout in like his other movies. But like in this one, he was like, he really, he went for the gusto, man. Like, it was awesome.
He went for it. You can't fault him.
Oh, yeah.
And then, yeah, there's just tons of it. John Turturro invents baseball, which might be.
Oh.
All right. Guys, this is not a good movie, okay? No. But John, you want to tell him about John Turturro inventing baseball?
Okay, so there's a scene where the guys happen upon John Turturro and a group of immigrants. He's trying to teach him like a new sport that he just came up with. John Turturro's character is Abner Doubleday, right? And so like he's teaching the immigrants, and he's teaching Sandler's gang like all about this sport that he just came up with. I think it was like Sticky Schnickums or something like that. He called it
Sticky McSchnickens.
Sticky McSchnickens, right? It involves like a ball and a stick, It's really baseball.
So we'll call it Sticky McShnickens.
So, like, basically, John Turturro as Abner Doubleday is teaching these guys how to play baseball. But, like, John Turturro's, like, Abner Doubleday is just, like, being really slimy. It's like, okay, you just got to get the ball past me two times. Well, that was two times. Wait, no, did I say two times? I meant three times. Wait, no, that ball was too low. It's got to be in the strike zone in between my knees and my titties.
Listen, John Turturro is such an amazing actor, but hearing him say from between my knees and titties.
It's like, wait, what are you doing? Like, no one hit the ball. It's like, well, I can steal the ball or I can steal the base. I'm like, what? He calls a guy like shortstop, like, that'll be your name forever. It was just amazing. We're watching Abner Doubleday just like, being slimy and also creating baseball at the same time. It was just like, it's such a great scene.
And a guy hits a home run. Jorge Garcia hits a home run or hits the ball really far. Yeah. And he's lazy. So he goes, I'm not going to catch that. Yeah, he's just, like, I'll just call that a home run. You can run around.
Yeah.
So do you know what I noticed the second time? Oh, so I watched both these movies and I watched them as background noise. And I was like, they're not bad. But so I had to sit down and watch them, like, right, to take notes for the pod.
Yeah.
And the one thing I did notice, it looks the Ridiculous Six is the best looking Adam Sandler movie ever made.
I mean, that bar wasn't really all that high in the first place, was it?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I mean, but they shot it all in widescreen, so the panoramas are amazing. The guy, Dean Semler, he shot Road Warrior, City Slickers, and Dances with Wolves.
Wow.
The cinematographer of the Ridiculous Six did that. So when you watch a lot of these shots, they are really pretty good looking. And Frank Coraci, who directed Sandler's most popular rated film, The Wedding Singer, directed this as well. So, I mean, in between Steve Buscemi touching Jorge Garcia's balls, shoving his hand into Taylor Lautner's mouth, and then using the gross cream as shaving cream, and then using that cream to reattach Harvey Keitel's head.
Ooh.
There's talent behind the camera.
Yeah. And it was also shot in 4K, right?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Like, yeah. There's a couple of panoramas that, like, there's a crane shot during it. And it goes kind of into this town. And it's this wide crane shot into this town. And I'm like, is this a Sandler film? Like, they tried to make it look good.
They did.
And yeah, there's a shot where, all right, so there's also kind of a scene I like where Luke Wilson plays a disgraced Secret Service guy who he went and took a dump, and because of that, Lincoln got killed. But there's a scene where Harvey Keitel beats up Luke Wilson, but Luke Wilson's holding the drink and he doesn't spill it. So he's getting the crap kicked out of him. He doesn't spill a drop of his whiskey. But there's a couple shots that are really good in there.
Right.
And so it's like, you're watching Taylor Lautner get pleasured by a donkey in a beautiful shot.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest movie.
It's so Adam Sandler, if you think about it.
Like, it's just like, and there's a couple of funny gags involving him jumping with knives and Taylor Lautner doesn't know how to do it. There's a gang, Will Forte's gang is the Left Eye Gang.
Yeah.
And they all say they chopped out their left eye.
Yeah.
And they, or no, the right eye, because they can see through the left, but they make Steve Zahn has one and a half eyes. Basically, he can, one eye sees good, the other one doesn't, but they make him take out his good eye so he can only see out this bad eye. But then he finds out that none of them have shot their eyes out except for him.
Oh.
I mean, it's terrible. Like, you know, of course, Rob Schneider plays a Mexican guy.
Yeah.
His donkey has constant diarrhea.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Parnell gets, I mean,
yeah,
doused with that. You know, Nick Swardson talks about how he joined a gang called the Texas Stubbies. He can infer what happens with that.
I just randomly remembered that scene where Taylor Lautner's character is being hanged. Oh, yeah. He was like, I just fooled you guys. I'm doing pretty good. He's like,
I
having
have a strong
fun.
Knee.
Yeah. He's like, he's having fun up there. He's like, he's swinging around.
Yeah, he has a strong neck.
Yeah.
But then there's this random scene that kind of had me chuckle where Adam Sandler's character doesn't have a horse. So he stops this horse-drawn carriage and he stops and they're like, what are you doing here? He's like, my horse it committed suicide. And the guy's like, he looks like a nice white guy. And they let him on to the thing. But I read a review where this is, if you think about it, Sandler's the nice guy. He's a good dude in this movie. In all of his other movies, he's like this man-child.
He's the the responsible kind of orphan. Or he's kind of like the responsible big brother, quote-unquote, of the gang.
Yeah, I think. And like he just wants to get his wife back. He loves his adopted father.
Smoking
He likes
Fox.
His brothers.
Yeah.
Oh, his wife? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And like, he's like the good guy. And he also has a couple funny bits about how he can, like, do some mystical shit.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not a good movie, guys. This movie is overly long. There's a weird scene where Vanilla Ice plays Mark Twain and David Spade is General Custard. What was it? And then Blake Shelton is Wyatt Earp.
Yeah. Which I can see.
Yeah. But there's a funny scene where Vanilla Ice is dancing. Terry Crews is playing the piano. Mm. And then Vanilla Ice is dancing and David Spade is like, all right. Okay. All right. And at the end, there's a piano scene where Terry Crews plays the piano with his dick. I mean, this is like a crazy movie.
It's totally Adam Sandler. I don't know. I can't explain it.
Now, if you sat there and watched this, like if you sat there like an angry film reviewer or a logical human,
yeah,
you might not have fun with this movie. But if you just like embrace that it's going to be a Sandler film and take a look at the cinematography.
It's actually, I think this is one of the better Adam Sandler movies. Not like the best Adam Sandler movies, but like it's in the top half, I would say.
Like
just barely.
Oh yeah, like there's that scene that you're talking about with Sandler. There's a fly making a lot of noise, right?
Mm.
And so Sandler throws a knife and then the fly's octave gets a lot like it goes it starts off going bear and then it goes wee. So the fly was bothering him, so Sandler chopped off a fly's balls and let it live. Like with a knife,
you should have just killed it, man.
Yeah, and like I have no idea what good old Nick Nolte said the entire film.
Nope, near that.
But I mean, listen, this is not a good movie, but it's a good Sandler movie,
right? If you're looking for a good Western comedy, this probably isn't what you're looking for. But if you're looking for like a decent Sandler movie. Just put it in your Netflix queue or list these days.
Yeah, like it's not. I don't know. Listen, when you're cleaning the floor, or how about this? When you're making eggs,
right?
Right, and then you got to work on a model airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Put it on.
Okay.
What do you think?
What about the model airplane?
Well, I mean, do you build model airplanes?
No, I don't.
Would you build a model airplane while watching this?
I mean, I don't really want to do either.
You've already done it?
Well, it was just like, I mean, neither option sounds really all that entertaining. So doing both at the same time doesn't make it better.
All right, so moving on to the do-over. A lot of people, I had that 3,000 comments. No one reads through the comments, right? Like, no one wants to read through 3,000 comments. Right. So I had about 1,000 comments going, the do-over is actually really good. I don't know if they voiced it like that, but it's not good.
No. This one's not as good as Ridiculous 6, which, just think about that for a second.
Yeah. I don't know how to. All right, so the do-over tells the story of David Spade's sad sack manager inside a grocery store, bank manager inside a grocery store. Adam Sandler comes into his life. He says he's like an FBI agent. They go boating. They promote Bud Light. They shoot flare guns at women. And then they fake their own deaths. And then they get some mansion. And then they find out that the two identities of the guys they took were doctors. Then you find out that Adam Sandler's character was a coroner. But then you find out that he had cancer. And the magic bullet drug that was being developed was being squashed Then they meet Paula Patton, who's the ex of one of the dead people they took their identities of. But then you find out that Big Chemo doesn't want this drug because it'll cost the chemo business trillions. Mm. And then a German guy has a very long, uncomfortable conversation with Adam Sandler about shoving a thing into Sandler's butt.
Yeah. It's a... Yeah, I don't know. This one was rough, man. Like, it was Pixels level rough for me. It was just... Yeah, I don't know. Something about this movie just really didn't hit any notes.
Nothing. There was only two bits I liked. I like that David Spade worked was a manager inside of a bank. I thought that was like interesting. Like, that's a funny idea.
Right.
And then there's one random line where Adam Sandler's watching his funeral, and he's like, "My dry cleaner showed up." Like, I don't know. I thought that was kind of a funny line.
I think
for some reason,
when like the girls are like, we're on the boat in the bikinis, and like David Spade just like drops trowel, and they all start laughing. I'm like, I chuckled at that. I'm like, oh, okay.
Like Sean Astin with a mustache. All right.
Yeah.
And then there's always a bit where Adam Sandler always makes David Spade smoke weed, and then he never does it. I don't really get that. But this is like 2 hours.
Yes.
And it feels like an 80-minute movie.
Yeah.
Stretched another 40 minutes.
It's
I feel like Apatow had a part of this.
Yeah. He wrote the the exposition. Maybe. I don't know.
The product placement in this movie alone.
Yeah.
Is insane. And then there's a weird threesome with Luis Guzman where his ball sweat drips on David Spade's face.
Ugh. That's Yeah. I didn't like this movie, if you can tell.
I feel like he got in shape for it though, Sandler.
Hmm.
Lacey, do you think he tried in this one, or do you think he just wanted to hang out and do product placement for Bud Light?
I think he just wanted to hang out.
There's a lot of Corona.
Yeah. I mean, Ridiculous 6 wasn't good either, but I felt like he was at least trying in that one. This one, he was just kind of like, yeah, what's up?
Like, there's no emoting. Like, and it turns out Sandler's married to Catherine Hahn.
Yeah.
And she's always awesome. I felt bad for her to be in this movie. Oh, did you like the bit about, so there's this guy who invented the drug, but then they squash the drug, and Sandler goes to talk to him, and he notices his Nikes.
Oh, yeah.
Then later on, the guy gets shot, and he gives Sandler his Nikes.
Yeah.
But then Sandler gets captured, then the German guy takes the Nikes. That's not very good.
Yeah, I wasn't really into it.
So guys, there is a 5-10 minute scene where Adam Sandler and this German guy, actually the doctor from Funny People, this guy has like this tool that's like used to like a sex tool, and he puts glue on it, that he puts a bunch of glass shards on it, and he's gonna shove it into Sandler's butt, and Sandler's like, well, you're gay if you shove that in my butt, and the guy's like, I'm not gay. It's like 10 minutes, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. I don't know, we're talking like Judd Apatow. Like a level going on way too long.
So. Like it got me uncomfortable.
Well, yeah. And then, you wouldn't want that up your butt either.
But yeah, so it is not good. And it's kind of weird because of all the comments I heard, people loved the do-over more than they liked Ridiculous 6.
Yeah, I don't.
Why do people like the duo more than Ridiculous 6?
I couldn't tell you why. I'm the complete opposite. I thought Ridiculous 6 was better. I mean, not saying it was good, but like there were like at least like a lot of scenes where like I chuckled. But duo over, I didn't get like a lot of. Didn't really get like a lot of hits, you know. I was just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, the first time I watched it on, like, background, I probably, you know, watched 40 minutes of it. Mm. Because, you know, you're home from work, you're doing other things. And you're so I'm like, dishes. Yeah, it's not terrible.
Yeah.
But sitting down to watch it all. Ugh.
All in one go.
It wasn't pretty.
You just suddenly realize your mistake. I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah. So if you got to watch one of these movies... Watch The Water Boy.
Yes.
for Happy Gilmore. But like I said, these are the most watched movies in Netflix history. So he's doing it right. Right. So, I mean, no matter what people say, it doesn't matter.
You know what's interesting is that Adam Sandler has kind of carved himself like a very unique position in the industry right now. Like, he's successful, but now he gets to just not worry about critical reviews or like box office numbers. Like, he just has to make Adam Sandler movies. I think for a lot of people in the industry, like, they would love to be in that position, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah. It's crazy.
I want to work on one of these.
Yeah, you'll probably just hang out, you know, have
you want
a beer.
Pina colada? Yeah.
Maybe you'll get in the Adam Sandler friend gravy Ooh. Train. You'll be set for life.
I'll have cameos in every movie.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I'm down.
Right. Well, okay. I think.
We did not like that movie.
No, it really took the wind out of our sails.
Yeah, it did.
All right. So what's the final takeaway for the podcast today, Mark?
Subway sandwiches.
Yeah, Subway sandwiches. They're good. Get the $5 footlongs.
Luis Guzman, ball sweat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it tastes like sometimes. I'm just kidding, Subway. We love you.
And Loot Crate.
Yeah. All right, Mark, before we sign off, were there any plugs we want to make?
Subway. Yeah, guys, head to Movies, Films, and Flicks. Check out all of our posts. Also, head to iTunes and review, rate, subscribe. Let us know what you think about the pod. Give us some glorious reviews. Also, check out The Lamb. The large association of movie blogs, www.largeassmovieblogs.com, for all your movie going needs. I did a 1950s movie draft with them, and mine was the best.
Nice.
Also, John Lazavath has a new podcast. It's called Eating Captain Crunch. And basically, what Lazavath does is he does like coconut milk, almond milk, 2% milk, skim milk, whole milk. Mm. And he says, like, hey, while eating, it's pretty gross, but he kind of talks about his experience with Captain Crunch with different kinds of milk.
I get a different reaction every time. You know, it's. I think next week we're gonna do strawberry milk. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's gonna work really well with the berries.
I gotta be honest, though. Your last podcast, I only understood three words.
Well, that was the soy milk. Podcast. I don't usually drink soy milk, so it really. I was struggling for words to describe.
I mean, it's better than the almond one where you swallowed a few whole Captain Crunch and you were coughing for about 30 minutes on the podcast.
Well, admittedly, I misunderstood the concept of almond milk.
What?
Because I thought you just put almonds in the milk and you went. But like,
wait, so you put Captain Crunch almonds and milk together?
Yeah, it didn't work out too well.
Interesting.
But yeah, you can find that podcast on sharkchopper.com along with other fine podcasts. Check out a small website called netflix.com. Without them, this podcast wouldn't have been possible. They don't sponsor us, but yeah. Netflix is also airing like a cool little show called Stranger Things.
Please, oh my gosh.
Please check it out if you haven't. It's a love letter to everything you love about the 80s. If you ever liked any movie that came out of the 80s, you'll want to watch this like right away.
It's not like a ripoff either. It's
yeah.
This is going to sound weird. I said it's like the Rolling Stones covering the Beatles. It's very familiar, but it's also really different.
I want to listen to that now. You got me thinking about it.
Right.
But yeah, I think we're going to cover it in the future pod because it has like so many obvious, you know, movie inspirations and influences. So keep an eye out for that pod sometime in the future. And yeah, I think that's it. John Levigood is currently out there in the world watching.
He's eating his way through North Carolina.
Yeah. That's a lot of barbecue that he's going through. I feel sorry for those pigs.
He's just walking around with a pig leg.
He's basically doing like a Pac-Man. It's like waka waka waka.
He has a bottle of Kraft like barbecue sauce in one hand, like the jumbo one you get from Costco, and then just a huge pig leg that's like 70 pounds.
I'm jealous.
He's just dousing it and eating.
I'm jealous. Waka waka waka.
I'm gone.
All right. For my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Waka, 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 waka.
I've been your host, John Losman. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
Don't watch the do-over.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.